What would you say you do here?
Oh, yeah, I'm having a fun time.
Here he comes on the far post. Socrates is there. Socrates is in. Socrates has scored. The Greeks are going mad. Socrates scores. But beautiful cross mark of Eden. The Germans are disputing it. Hegel is arguing that the reality is merely an a priori adjunct of non-naturalistic ethics. Kant, by the categorical imperative, is holding that ontologically exists only in imagination. And Marx is claiming it was offside.
My eyes have seen the glory. The United States has shocked Portugal. Game over.
Live from the Jerry Payne Studio in downtown Chicago, this is Farm Post Radio on ChicagolandSportsRadio.com.
Woo! It's Farm Post Radio, ChicagolandSportsRadio.com, and what a way to start the return of Far Post Radio by being, 8 minutes late. But there's a good reason for that, and that is because I was taping at 11:30. We got in contact with Kevin Egan of the Chicago Fire TV crew and the Big Ten Network. He is over in Ireland on holiday. So we had to record it half an hour early. So he will be on the full 20-minute interview uninterrupted at 12:20, so in about 10 minutes. Afterwards, we will break down all of the stuff that went on yesterday. Don Garber made a bunch of statements, as he does, in between round one and two. And oh, by the way, there was a player draft yesterday. We'll talk a bit about that later. Guillermo Rivera will join us at 1 o'clock as well to talk a bit about the Fire. And we will have a bunch of other awesome stuff on the line coming up down the pipeline. It's been a while. I've been away. 312-564-7375 is the number to call into the studio. You can also tweet at me, Ruben Tisch. And you can email the show at RubenPTisch@gmail.com. Still sort of working out things. Big time right here on ChicagolandSportsRadio.com. The return of Far Post Radio. Welcome back, and I really appreciate you tuning in. Go to ChicagolandSportsRadio.com, click the Listen Live tab, or you can go to TuneIn. TuneIn.com or TuneIn mobile app on your phone and listen in that way. So we are going to start today in the 5 minutes or so I have before I have to get the Kevin Egan interview set up to go at 12:20, which means a commercial break. The Major League Soccer draft is the huge news, but I haven't been around sort of to comment on the Michael Bradley, Jermaine Defoe action going on up in Toronto. Now, Toronto, if Toronto does not have a big year next year, if Toronto does not have a big year as far as their stuff, as far as if Toronto does not have a big year, as far as the as far as quality goes, not only they have to win the Herbalife Canadian Championship or whatever the heck it is up there, the Canadian Champions League Mickey Mouse tournament or whatever, that they've got to win that and get back in the Champions League. They have to they have to at least make the playoffs. For the first time in, I think, the 7 years of existence, you cannot not make the playoffs this year, Toronto FC. You just can't. And there's a whole other big question going out there about what does this mean for Major League Soccer? What exactly does this mean as far as MLS salary structure goes? And MLS. What does this mean? What is the league? This is a new Major League Soccer. Yes, we know about the whole Beckham thing. You thought that was breaking the bank for David Beckham. But Michael Bradley is coming. You got to pay $10 million to Roma. You get $6 million in salary for Michael Bradley. That is unprecedented in Major League Soccer. That is absolutely unprecedented. Nobody makes that much money in this league. And you're seeing it again with Mo Adu. And there are questions about him in Philly that we will get to later on in the show. About him in Philly and whether or not he deserves that kind of money. That is a huge question. Does Mo Adu deserve the $1.2 million he's asking for Philadelphia? I don't think he's worth that much money. However, Philadelphia deserves the right to fail. Philadelphia can go out and sign Joe. Essentially what this is the Philadelphia Union signing Joe Johnson to a max contract, which is what the Brooklyn Knee New Jersey Nets did to make that correlation in the basketball. Because I think this whole MLS NFL thing is wrong. Major League Soccer is more NBA, especially with its collective bargaining salary cap rules and the sort of weirdness and the exceptions. You don't get the kind of exceptions like that in MLS. You do in the NBA. This is definitely more an NBA type league salary structure wise than the NFL. So you can say this is Philadelphia signing Joe Johnson to a max deal with the $1.2 million to Mo Adu. I say let him do it, because if they're going to fail and fail spectacularly, they have every right to do so. It's Far Post Radio, Chicagoland Sports Radio.com. As I said, coming up next on the show, the full 20 minutes I spent talking about half an hour ago to Kevin Egan, who was gracious to join us from Ireland. So you got that looking forward to. That's next. It's Far Post Radio, Chicagoland Sports Radio. Post Radio, Chicagoland Sports Radio.com. Couple of technical problems with the file. The Kevin Egan interview is on. We will have that for you. By the way, Guillermo Rivera on at 1 o'clock. Just a reminder there. I'm curious. Let's talk about stuff. 312-564-7375 is how you can get in touch with the show. Says the man who cannot speak English. So I was talking about before we had to break about the Jermaine Defoe, Michael Bradley TFC thing. I'm excited. I am excited for this experience we are going to get. The Eastern Conference is freaking huge right now. I mean, New York, obviously, Kansas City, the reigning defending MLS Cup champions, DC United, who have improved substantially with some of their offseason moves and with their draft yesterday. My God, New England's draft, getting both Newman and
Mac Hartman Trophy, which is the equivalent of the Heisman in college soccer. I believe the only two-time winner in history, Patrick Mullins, is there for that. It's absolutely fantastic is what it is for both MLS and for Toronto. I'm actually, you know what? I'm going to say I'm happy for Toronto because they have been god-awful ever since they got in the league. I won't say they're Chivas USA bad because they're not that embarrassing. But they are, in fact, really fairly embarrassing. It's actually fairly hilarious. Because just the stuff that goes on there, their whole like spat between the Red Patch Boys and the Nordica with them in Columbus when they came into the league was hilarious. Just sort of the ridiculous, the fact that they still sing Danny Dicchio's name. I think it was pointed out, I forget which article it was. I think that was in the Independent. Just how comically bad, excuse me, of a bit of a throat thing. So bear with me. How hilariously bad it is. It's been up there in for Canada's favorite team. Well, I mean, they're in Toronto, so I'm assuming, but whatever. For all I know, it could be the Montreal Impact and their weird Italian sort of deal. So that is that's a bit weird. But back to the Eastern Conference for a bit. excuse me. Columbus has gotten better. They got rid of Chad Marshall. And brought in Michael Parkhurst, who should help them significantly because, excuse me, Michael Parkhurst should help them significantly because they finally have a defender who's not going to fall apart. Who's just not going to, you're going to touch him and then he's going to go down and then you're done. Like, and then what are they going to do defensively? Unfortunately for them, they're not finished in that respect. They still have a heck of a lot of work to do on the defensive end of the ball because your other defenders, excuse me, the only one of note really is Tyrone Wall. And he's kind of just okay. I mean, you still have one of the best goalies in the league in Andy Greidenbaum, the Hebrew Hammer. But Columbus is there, and you're going to have Arrieta and Higuain and Oduro back. And Greg Berhalter apparently knows what he's doing there in Columbus, which I suppose is nice for Columbus. Obviously, you know what you're getting with the Red Bulls. You're getting Tim Cahill and Thierry Henry and Dax McCarty. What are they going to do on defense, though? Is an interesting question there. So that's pretty interesting. Philadelphia, though, let's talk about the Union and some of the things that went on yesterday. They trade from number 2 to number 1 to get themselves the first ever goaltender taken overall number 1. How it's working for them. It's a bit weird because there were reports yesterday that there was a confrontation, if you will, between Zach McMath and some of the Union bigwigs because of that. Zach McMath got to be gone. And Which is weird, because now, does he make a lot of mistakes? Yes, he does, because he's a young goaltender, and you're going to get those. You think that Manchester United fans were, granted, this is a completely different scale, obviously, but do you think Manchester United fans were particularly enthused with David De Gea's play his first couple of years? I think not. But it's got to be done. That sort of deal has got to be done. Because you know what you're getting out of Zach McMath. He'll make mistakes, especially on crosses, because of an eye injury he suffered. So there's going to be problems there for Philadelphia. And it is definitely going to be interesting for what is there for him. So what we are going to do now is we are going to take a break. Or no, we're not. We're going to play right on through. We're going to do a sports update. And then we are going to play for you the Kevin Egan interview, which I did. It's nice. It's a good interview. He's good. He's in Ireland with his family, which gave us a bit, which will give us a bit of insight in sort of all these MLS happenings around the league. So I'm going to update you on some of the scores from last night around the world of sports. And then Kevin Egan coming up next. It's Far Post Radio, ChicagolandSportsRadio.com.
Welcome back. It's Far Post Radio, ChicagolandSportsRadio.com. And joining us on the line is Chicago Fire broadcaster and Big Ten Network contributor, so he'll really help us out break down the happenings of the draft yesterday, is Kevin Egan. Kevin, thank you, and by the way, thank you for taking a bit of time out of your holiday over across the pond.
Yeah, well, greetings from across the pond. It's lovely to be on the show, as always, Ruben, so busy times for the Fire, and I'm happy to jump on the call.
No problem at all. So let's start. Because we've been off on the show for a couple weeks, and we haven't really had time to discuss some of the homegrown signings. First, let's start off with the higher profile of the two, and that would be Mac Harmon, trophy finalist and MVP of the College Cup, Harry Shipp. What kind of player do you think he's going to be for this club?
I fully believe Harry Shipp is ready for Major League Soccer. Fully equipped, fully ready to go. He's a guy that obviously spent his career at Notre Dame. I spoke to Notre Dame head coach Bobby Clark before Christmas. Bobby Clark's a man, obviously, from Scotland. He played under Sir Alex Ferguson. Great amount of experience. And when I asked him about Harry Shipp, he sat back and he just said to me, with a breath, and he just said, you know, I've been blessed to be able to coach a guy like Harry Shipp. Now, he didn't play Harry Shipp he didn't play him much at all in his earlier years at Notre Dame. He just played him this year, and that's kind of Bobby Clark's way as a manager, is to let guys kind of become acclimatized within the college. But Harry Shipp was spectacular throughout this season with Notre Dame, and I think he's ready for the Fire. I covered him with the Big Ten Network, and he's a guy, he's got such a Messi-like sense of gravity. And please, I'm not comparing him to Messi by any stretch of the imagination, but when he touches the ball, he knows exactly where his next pass is going. And he knows, he just has that sense of awareness that a lot of players don't naturally have. His soccer IQ is incredibly good, and he's a mature young guy, and I just feel he's ready to go. I compare him to, there's a player that San Jose are after securing on a homegrown contract, Tommy Thompson from Indiana. Yeah. Tommy Thompson, for me, is a similar style player, but he's nowhere near as ready as Harry Shipp. Tommy Thompson just finished his freshman year at Indiana, and I think he needs a few more years with the Hoosiers to be ready for Major League Soccer. Compare him to Harry Shipp, and Shipp is ready to go. He's top class.
With Ship coming in, that brings up some interesting things going on in midfield for the Fire. You've got Alex, who seemingly, by default, inherits the sort of number 10 attacking midfielder role in the side. Do you think Ship can challenge for an opening day spot in the 11?
No, I don't think so. I don't think he will for many reasons. With that number 10 role, and you've mentioned the number 10, like, I don't really agree. I think Mike McGee is more the number 10 if you play Juan Luis Anangono. Juan Luis will be the out-and-out striker. Mike McGee would drop that a little bit deeper. But with that Alex role comes a lot of defensive responsibility. And I'm not so sure Harry Shipp would be ready for that. He may be ready to play in that deeper role or out wide. Or if they wanted to push Mike McGee further up front, as the out-and-out striker, you could play Harry Shipp in behind him. But for defensive style of player, I don't think he's ready for that yet. He would need to be played out wide or as a withdrawn striker. Those would be his two options, in my opinion.
The way the roster seems to be constructed, though, it seems like they'd play a more diamond 4-4-2 just based on the fact that Mike McGee scored all those goals, so you can't really not drop him back deep, can you?
No, Mike McGee has to play up front, but the question is, do you play him as close to goal as he was when he was playing alongside Chris Rolfe, or do you play him in that role a little bit withdrawn? Because Juan Luis Anangono is not going to be that withdrawn player, is he? Harry Shipp, I don't think he's ready defensively. He'll play a little bit deeper. Mike McGee, the question for me is, can the Fire bring in someone else up front in the off-season? I don't think it's going to happen yet. Big waste of expectation now on Juan Luis Anangono, because he has to get closer to goal and start to score a lot more goals, throw his weight around a little bit more, and take some pressure off Mike McGee. He's going to be a marked man at the start of this season, and someone else is going to have to step up.
It's Far Post Radio, ChicagolandSportsRadio.com. Ruben Tisch, along with Kevin Egan, who is so gracious to give us a little bit of his time on his holiday over in Ireland. Let's talk a bit about some of the more, I don't want to say recent, but some of the other acquisitions not draft included. So John Kennedy Hurtado and Patrick Yanni from Seattle for Jaleelani Baba, and also a player you are very familiar with, working with the Big Ten Network in Northwestern's Chris Ritter, are also on a homegrown contract. It definitely helps the Fire defensively, those three moves. But what can we see from the for this year specifically, Hurtado or Ayani essentially pairing with Austin Berry? And frankly, what does this do for Bakari Samari? Is he on his way out as well?
It's interesting, isn't it, to have so much experience at the back. Austin Berry, really, for his age, has a lot of experience. Bakary Samari, and then you've got John Kennedy Hurtado and Patrick Yanni, both guys 28 and 29 years of age, both played over 80 times for Seattle, plenty of experience. I think I wouldn't be surprised if you saw a big Bakary Samari alongside John Kennedy Hurtado to start the season. Austin Berry has a lot to prove, didn't quite live up to his Rookie of the Year season last year, I didn't think. The interesting one for me is, I just think it's a wonderful move from the Fire to bring in experience from Seattle. Jaleelani Baba, will miss him in Chicago, but at the same token, his distribution last year and some of his performances left a lot to be desired. And, you know, I think Fire fans, I saw one or two tweets saying, if Jaleelani Baba is not playing in Toyota Park next year, I'm not coming to watch the Fire. I think, you know, it's not like the Chicago Fire let go of a very young Cafu from Brazil. It's they're bringing in two very experienced guys, which the Fire were kind of crying out for in many ways last season. Mm-hmm. Don't forget, the team shipped 52 goals in 2013. That's not good enough. So experience was needed, and it's an incredibly smart move from the club. The other guy you mentioned, Chris Ritter from Northwestern. Chris Ritter, I know him well personally, and I know him as a player, and he just strikes me, he's such a mature guy. And if you were to ask me what type of player he is, he's incredibly solid, he's reliable, he's that type of guy who'll step in and do a job wherever he's needed. He played centre midfield for Northwestern throughout his career, was a fifth year senior, really, really well respected in college soccer, coached Tim Lennon up in Northwestern, loved him, and I really think he naturally might be a Major League Soccer centre half. He'll have to wait for that opportunity now that the Fire has such wealth at the back. But you may see him slot in centre midfield in place of Jeff Lorenzo at the odd time, or maybe even before the draft, I was going to say maybe even as a right back. But obviously now that's not needed with Marco Franco and Lavelle Palmer on board.
Right. So you've got Marco Franco, who he definitely, with the ouse of Jarrell and Robbie, you were thinking a lot of us here back in Chicago, we're sort of thinking, what were they going to do? Were they going to sign somebody? Were they just going to go with Lavelle Palmer? But it turns out that you get, you get a guy in Marco Franco who, as far as I can see, is a very good player. And as I was talking to him yesterday during the conference call, seemed very confident in the fact that he could help not only defensively but also going forward.
Yeah, and from watching a bit, you know, some of his games, he's quite a mature player. Excellent first touch. But the thing that excites me most, as a Fire fan, first and foremost, is the injection of pace. When he gets on the ball, you know the way some players just glide with the ball at their feet. They don't look like they're making any kind of an effort to sprint with the ball at their feet. You didn't see that with Jalil Anibaba. He was overlapping Patrick Nyako and Billy Duca. But when he had the ball, he kind of stuttered a little bit. It's going to be a different case with Marco Franco. Now, I don't want to put too much pressure on him. I think you may see Lavelle Palmer start and maybe give Marco Franco a little bit of time, but I think Fire fans should be excited. Clearly, the Fire knew exactly what they were doing in the draft, giving away the 8th spot for the number 13. They identified their position that they needed, and they went after their man. And, you know, hopefully for Frank Yallop and the coaches, it works out.
So, you're in Ireland. That's, by the way,
yes,
Far Post Radio, SkylineSportsRadio.com.
I'm delighted. Happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
In Ireland, that means law, breath, law, homeditch.
You're making me blush. So we have a situation that is huge all over the world, especially in Canada and sort of British Isles, sort of where you are. That being Jermaine Defoe and Michael Bradley have signed with Toronto FC. First, what are your impressions of the move for Toronto? What do you think this means for MLS as a league? And have you had to find yourself with your friends or down at the pub or whatever defending the honor of Major League Soccer to an English public who, or an Irish and English public who don't really seem too high on the league?
No, they don't, and you've got it spot on, Ruben, because there's so many times over the Christmas break and since I've been home that I've had to kind of, you know, just defend and show the quality of player in Major League Soccer and some of the goals. You know, I've been showing the Camilo goal and all sorts of goals to friends to say this is the quality that's within the league. Look, the league is nowhere near the standard of Premier League yet. That's for all to see, but Major League Soccer has made fantastic strides of late, and to bring over a guy like Jermaine Defoe, who's still young enough, who's still eager to get in the World Cup squad. I'm not sure if he will, but it's realistic for him because he's an absolute goal scorer. He's a goal scoring machine. And now the question is, who has the best striker in Major League Soccer? Toronto will say they will, because he'll score so many goals if given the right opportunities. And you look at the players playing in behind him. And what a signing Michael Bradley was. I'd have to ask you the same question. What was the bigger deal while you were in the States, the signing of Defoe or Michael Bradley?
Michael Bradley, actually, because of his spot on the U.S. men's national team, and sort of for the same reasons, you sort of found yourself defending Major League Soccer from the U.S. men's national team fans who don't really think that MLS is good enough for Michael Bradley, essentially.
Yeah, it's a strange one. It really is. It's a strange one all around, because Michael Bradley could have had plenty of offers around Europe. I was surprised. I've supported Aston Villa as a child growing up, and I was kind of surprised that he didn't make it at Villa when he was given an opportunity under Gerard Houllier. But he's back at Toronto now. He's got to perform. He's got to do better. He's got to get in, and Clint Dempsey has to have a big season ahead of him as well. Coming up toward the World Cup, the US obviously in a tricky group with Ghana, Portugal and Germany, and they're in many ways the US's best two players, I think, alongside Landon Donovan. So it's going to be a big year. It's going to be interesting, and I think from a Chicago Fire perspective, all of a sudden the conference is so much better on the East. You know, you look at DC, the improvements they've made, the improvements now Toronto has made, and they were the basement boys last year. So all of a sudden now the Fire are looking underneath and saying, some really good players. I saw Philadelphia brought on Kevin Cope from Michigan State yesterday, who I really, really rate. I think he's going to be a very good defender in Major League Soccer in years to come. And it's going to be a very fascinating league this year with Toronto and DC improving.
One of the interesting stories yesterday afternoon was the fact that two-time Mark Herman Trophy winner Patrick Mullins dropped out of the top 10. You're sort of hearing things about how he wasn't really rated that high because they didn't know if he could score on an MLS level. Is that a fair criticism for him, and should that be enough to drop a guy who was so prolific in college, so exceptional with a goal-scoring rate, to drop to New England outside the top 10? I think you went like 11th or 12th. Is that fair?
Well, ask yourself. The thing I think is important here is ask yourself, who are the coaches and what were they looking for? Because Mullins is obviously a very good player. Is he an excellent college player? Yes. Does that mean he can transition to be an excellent Major League Soccer player when you're up against defenders like John Kennedy, Hurtado, and Baki Samara, big physical guys? It doesn't necessarily mean you have the tools to succeed. And I think if Mullins wasn't picked at 11 or 12 and he went all the way to 13, I still don't think the Fire would have picked him because the Fire had identified what they need in their team. Do you think Mullins would have come to Chicago? Do you think Frank Yelich would have taken him if it had gone to 13? I don't think so.
Maybe if they hadn't have gotten the Harry Shipp deal done. But because of that deal, then that sort of area wasn't really needed all that much.
Correct. And I honestly think the Fire have got two guys that potentially, I think most coaches recognize the fact that Chris Ritter is Major League Soccer ready. And it's something that I try to also try and explain to my friends at home. When I talk about guys like Chris Ritter, and I say, oh, he's ready, he's coming out of college, and they look at me and they say, well, of course he's ready. The guy's 23 years of age. He better be ready. If he's not going to be ready at 23, when will he be? So Ritter is ready. He's big and strong. Harry Shipp is also old enough to step right in now and make an impact. The question for coaches was Mullins ready to go, in terms of being, mature enough soccer-wise and physically as well. And obviously in New England, they're taking a chance. It's a good chance given that he was touted as being the number one, and he was the Herman Trophy winner the last 2 years. So we'll wait and see. They've brought in some great young players over the past few years in New England. He might be another one.
What is the perception of the American game over there, especially since you kind of have to explain sort of weird idiosyncrasies like the collegiate system?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tricky one to explain. There's so many questions. The system all around the world seems to be so straightforward compared to America. But I think most people are very open to learning about Major League Soccer. And one thing that always stands out for me is the initiatives, the website, the app. It's very easy for fans around the world to learn about U.S. soccer by going on to the Major League Soccer app. MLSsoccer.com has some wonderful things like just the anatomy of a goal, the highlights that they show. You can break it down by individual highlights, 20-minute highlights, full match replays. And they offer you that. The Premier League don't do anything like that. And the Premier League is so popular because of television rights. And I think in time, Major League Soccer will start to see that. I read an article when I was going to bed last night that the ratings for the MLS Cup had gone down. And the ratings, alongside something like Everybody Loves Raymond, I think it said, the RSL Portland game was below that. And that side of it has to improve, and that will take time. But in terms of talking to my friends, yeah, it's a funny one. You have to try and explain everything to them and also say that, my friends would say, well, Robbie Keane is one of the stars of MLS, right? And I'd say, yeah, he is. And they'd say, well, he wouldn't get a game for a Premier League team right now. So they try and argue that aspect. But Keane is just a cute player. I think he'd succeed in any league.
One last quick sort of semi-ridiculous question I have for you. Actually, I think I forgot.
You're scaring me now, really.
I always have to end it on a slightly ridiculous note. Do you ever sort of laugh and make fun of them that we get to watch the 3 o'clock games on television and they don't?
Oh, you have no idea. It's beyond belief. I talk to my father and he'd say, what are you doing? And I say, I'm watching the game. And he says, well, surely Villa Hull isn't on TV. And I said, well, I've access through my NBC app. And it's beyond belief that I've been home for a good stint now, this time, and I cannot watch the majority of the games. There's no access to them. And that's one thing that's amongst many things that the initiative with Major League Soccer and television sports in general in the United States is so far ahead of any other country in the world.
right. Thank you for taking so much time out of your vacation for us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks again for having me on.
No problem. That was Kevin Egan of the Chicago Fire and the Big Ten Network. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back here. This is Fire Post Radio, ChicagolandSportsRadio.com.
Far Post Radio, ChicagolandSportsRadio.com. Top of the hour, Guillermo Rivera from Fire Confidential will join us. We'll talk a bit more about hashtag CF97, their moves yesterday, and a bit more about Ianni and Hurtado, and Jahlil Anibaba's gone, and the right back, and Harrison Schiff, and all that stuff. Which is nice. It'll be fun. Good stuff to talk about. Some other interesting MLS stuff. Well, I have a few minutes before the top. So, Mark Geiger is your American World Cup referee. The 39-year-old MLS official and high school math teacher from Beachwood, New Jersey, is a thing that is happening for MLS. You know, for all the stick we get about MLS and RefPro and them, he's one of only 24 referees chosen in the world to be a World Cup referee now. You all remember Komen Koulibaly and the dubious, the absolute dubious refereeing decisions that go on in the World Cup. But it's kind of a big deal to have an American referee in the World Cup. I want to watch. I mean, obviously, I'll watch the game. All how many games are on the World Cup? Obviously. But it's interesting that out of all the U.S. referees, they chose Mark Geiger. I think we should all be thankful it wasn't Baldomero Toledo. That'd be nice. Be nice if it wasn't Baldomero Toledo. Or it wasn't Baldomero Toledo. That's nice. That's good. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. And it is, in fact, a good thing. So, we are going to update you on scores from around hockey and basketball. We will do that because it is the top of the hour now. And afterwards, it will be Guillermo Rivera, Fire Confidential, joining us on the phone to talk about all the good stuff right here. It's Far Post Radio, ChicagolandSportsRadio.com, and on TuneIn.
You're listening to ChicagolandSportsRadio.com. It's not just sports, it's a way of life.
Oh, yeah, I'm having a fun time. Oh, my gosh. Probably the best time I've ever had in my entire life.
And now for something completely different.
Live from the Jared Payne Studio in downtown Chicago, this is Far Post Radio on ChicagolandSportsRadio.com.
Far Post Radio, ChicagolandSportsRadio.com. We welcome you back here, and hopefully this will work this time. Joining us on the phone is Guillermo Rivera from Fire Confidential. Guillermo, happy post-MLS draft to you.
Happy post-MLS draft to you, sir.
Thank you very much. So, That's where we will start. Marco Franco is your right back of the future and maybe of the present. Guillermo? Is you there? I can't hear you. What is going on? Guillermo?
I'm here, Ruben.
Ah, there you go. We got you, hopefully. That's nice. So, Marco Franco, the right back of the future and possibly of the present, eh? So, you're telling me you're here, and I can hear you sometimes, but sometimes I can't hear you. I wonder what's going on. Is it a headphone issue? It's not a headphone issue. Are you there?
I am.
You're going in and out a bit. And by a bit, I mean a lot. See, right there is an issue. I can't hear you. So, we're going to have Guillermo call back. Which is a bit of a disappointment, because this Marco Franco thing, it's good. I like it. I like what's going on. And now there's a ring somewhere. Hold on, give me 2 seconds. Let's try now, line. Answer, line two, pot up, Guillermo. Your phone seems to be giving us some trouble here. Guillermo? No, not happening. It is not happening, I suppose. Your phone is a bit wonky. Let's see. Let's try line one again. Guillermo?
Yeah, I'm trying my other phone. We'll see if this works.
This one works perfectly, spectacularly, stupendously. So
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with the other one, but I can hear you now.
All right, there we go. So, Guillermo, Marco Franco, the right back of the future and possibly the present.
yeah.
What do you think we got here?
Well, I'm not sure if he's the right back of the immediate future, but Yelp spoke very highly of him yesterday. You can never really tell with the super draft picks. It's always a roll of the dice. Even picking at 13 in the first round, it seems like they got a pretty good value for him. They needed a right back, and they selected the best one that was available. You can never really tell. You know, without having really seen this guy day in and day out, I suppose you have to trust what the fire in each club's technical staff has seen in each one of the players they've selected. But until we actually see him in training camp and playing against professional players, you never really know him, these guys.
So let's talk about some quantifiable things. Patrick Ianni, John Kennedy, Hurtado are on the club. Jahlil Lonnibaba is off the club. At face value, this seems, especially with Franco, and apparently they like what they see out of Lavelle Palmer, at right back, but you are automatically better at center back than you have been since Arne Friedrich left.
Yeah, well, you're deeper at center back, certainly. It'll be interesting to see what the starting center back tandem will be come opening day. I think Yelop alluded to it the other day that there could be another deal in the works to move one or two of those guys, whether it's the guys that were here before in Tumari and Barry, or one of the two guys, or maybe even both, the guys they got from Seattle. Center backs do hold some commodity in MLS, so they've got four of them now that can play in the league. I think Yelop is going to use those guys as bargaining chips to get something else that he may need or want from someone else.
You are plugged in to the inner workings of the league more than probably anybody I know or can contact. for this. So I'm going to have to ask you a bit about this whole Toronto thing, because there are rumors going around that it was an okayed by all the owners because it might be the same deal as Clint Dempsey, at least on the Bradley end, as far as the league paying the transfer fee as opposed to just Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment doing it. If that's true, what does that say about where the league is as a business and as a entertainment product?
Well, it's still a work in progress. You've got to remember that they're only 19 years old now, so they're going to act in the best interest of the league as a whole in bringing in guys like Michael Bradley and Clint Dempsey and facilitating their moves by massaging the rules and paying their transfer fees. They've got the situation in Philadelphia now where they're apparently refusing or at least questioning the salary that the union are agreeing to pay Maurice Adu. I know it angers a lot of people. It angers a lot of people in the media and in the fan base for each club, because it does make it look like there is some nefarious undertone to massaging the rules just to make it work for one particular club over the other. But I think they've got to consider what the impact of bringing in a guy like Michael Bradley and the impact of bringing in a guy like Clint Dempsey will do for attention in the U.S. in particular, and with the TV contracts coming up. And I think they've decided that, hey, we've got the chance to bring back two key national team players. We've got TV contracts that are going to be renegotiated here soon. We've got a chance to create some buzz within the league and within the sporting market in America. So they look at that as kind of the whole of the sum rather than just helping Toronto, or in the past cases, people have claimed that they've helped L.A. get around salary cap issues. I think they're kind of looking at each individual case as to how it will help the league as a whole rather than helping one individual club over the other.
I think it's interesting that they're playing it off like this, especially because you hear a lot about the MLS-NFL comparison, because a lot of their sort of competitive structure is based around the NFL model, but contractually it's a lot more like the NBA in the way the NBA structures its salary rules and collective bargaining, because you don't sort of get exceptions like you do in the NBA and MLS. Is this just a case of them not wanting to make what I equated to earlier on in the show as a Joe Johnson max contract deal, which was a mistake for every party involved in with the Brooklyn Nets organization, and they're sort of living to it with a really bad team? But then the other side is, should not Philadelphia be allowed to fail spectacularly if they want to fail spectacularly?
Yeah, both the good points on both ends there. I think that's what they're trying to do is to make sure that if the guy they're bringing in isn't going to make as big an impact for the league as they anticipate, a guy like Maurice Adu, they want to make sure that they're not overpaying him ridiculously above what they think he can return them, either on the field or off the field for that matter. $1.2 million for Maurice Adu, when you look at the salary structure with the rest of the league, seems ridiculous. But there's something to be said with taking the training wheels off and letting Philadelphia spend money if they so desire to spend their money. But because all player contracts are essentially with the league, they're going to look at it and make sure that they're not doing something that that they don't feel is worth it.
Now, these has sort of gotten us in Fireland in a bit of a hubbub, sort of like a where's ours sort of on the designated player front. But the moves they made, the Hurtado move, the Ship and Ritter signings, it seems to me that the Fire are taking a more long view road to the top, sort of like in the Salt Lake, Kansas City mode. And it seems to me that that seems to be a better way to get sustainable success as opposed to just spending a bunch of money.
Yeah, I mean, there's two paths to take to success. The LA Galaxy spent a lot of money and won two championships. Sporting Kansas City won a championship and didn't go overboard in spending money. They had a DP in Bieler. Real Salt Lake has DPs, but they are, you know, they're not extravagantly paid. You know, one thing that I think you have to realize from the Chicago standpoint, you know, and it may be wise to take the approach that, hey, we're going to go, we're going to essentially operate like a smaller market, like a Real Salt Lake or a Sporting Kansas City, and bring in not cheaper DPs, but more economical DPs that can play in the league. That's just, you know, assuming that they bring in the right guys. But I think from the Chicago standpoint, you can play that way. But I think at some point, when you look at Salt Lake, Real Salt Lake, and you look at Sporting Kansas City, both of those teams right now are in the midst of being very popular in their own cities. They are very well marketed, and a lot of it may have to do with not having as much competition as the Chicago market does. But the Fire can't really play by that rule, because at some point they have to make an imprint in the Chicago market to draw themselves some attention. At some point, they're going to have to make a big move if they want to establish some sort of footprint in the Chicago area. I think they did that with Cuauhtemoc Blanco, and they haven't done it since. At some point, they've got to revitalize their product, and I don't know that they have the time to sit and wait for kids to come through the academy. You know, that's all well and good, but with the new bargaining agreement coming up, the new TV deal coming up, I think they're... the pressure is going to be on to make that big move. They've got to, at some point, invigorate the market for Chicago Fire here locally. It doesn't really exist right now.
You mentioned Los Angeles, which is interesting because, yes, they have the sort of big splash moves. But also, if you look at the roster up and down, it's a lot of Americans either via the college system or homegrown talent. They signed another homegrown talent, I believe it was 3 or 4 days ago, who is reportedly very, very good. So LA is kind of doing both. Is that kind of what we want Chicago to do? Is we want them to kind of be both?
Yeah, I think that ideally that's what you want, especially from the Chicago market. I think at some point MLS would like to see the Chicago market become as viable as Los Angeles. New York's TV market isn't there, but they've gone out of their way and spent money to at least bring the league some attention. They've got Thierry Henry is there, Tim Cahill's there, so they've drawn some attention toward the league. Although, even though the TV ratings haven't come out of New York like they would have hoped. Now, at some point, the league is going to want the Chicago market to draw big numbers. And it is just not doing it that way. It's just not doing it right now. And sure, they may be able to put together a competitive team, like I said, going through the smaller market approach. But I think the league would like them to think bigger just because it is Chicago. And that's, you know, not saying that they won't make it work the other way, but at some point there's got to be a move that will draw some interest.
You know, something I've noticed, and it's even gone since Cuauhtemoc Blanco left it, the Fire seem to be more on national television for Spanish language games. They seem to be very big with Univision and Telefutura and their games, as opposed to the English language. Is that still true that... at least with the Fire, that while they may not draw in an English market, they're still drawing nationally, Hispanically?
Yeah, well, I think if you look at the league as a whole, I know you were talking earlier about the New York Times article that mentioned MLS Cup and their ratings dropping and the Real Salt Lake Portland game hovering somewhere around a rerun for Everybody Loves Raymond. But, you know, a lot of those numbers don't take into account the Hispanic market and what Univision is pulling in or Unimas is pulling in. I think the MLS Cup total audience was considerably higher when you take in the Spanish language broadcast. So I think when you look at those numbers, you've got to look at both of them. And they don't always come across that way in articles like New York Times, because they're looking at the ESPN number or the NBC Sports Network number.
Mm. Thank you for taking a bit of time to join us, and I hope to talk to you again, and maybe I'll see you on Fire Media Meet the Players Coach Day before training camp, whatever that is. Does that have an official name? Is that like preseason media day, like officially, like a name or whatever?
Yeah, I don't know that there's an official media day. It's usually, and I don't know that because the players come in on a Saturday this week, and actually it's 8 days away now, so it's right around the corner. But depending on if it's the preseason, usually when they trained at the Bridgeview Sports Dome, you had a day or two before they actually left for training camp. They're doing it a little differently this year, so I don't know if there's an official name for it.
All right. Maybe it's the Meet the Team Player Photograph Day. one other quick thing before we leave. The unveiling of the new uniforms will be like a week and a half before the season. That doesn't seem like a good business decision to me. Why are they waiting so long to unveil the jersey? Is it because they know that no one's going to be happy with it because they don't have a white stripe on it?
Oh boy, that loaded question. It's very well possible, Ruben. I think they may be looking to time it with some of the Jersey League announcements, but I suspect they may be anticipating some backlash.
Hey, thanks for coming out, Guillermo.
All right, thanks.
That's Guillermo Rivera of Fire Confidential. So great of him to join us. Coming up next, stuff and things. We will talk more soccer because that's what we do. It's Far Post Radio, Chicagoland Sports Radio.com. Far Post Radio, Chicagoland Sports Radio.com. And guess who's on the line? It's some Liverpool fan or something. I don't know. Steven, how are you doing?
Not bad. At least I'm not wearing my Sunderland stuff today to smite Man U for Tuesday.
Go Josie. So you're close enough to Toronto, being that you're in Buffalo. What's the word on the street there as far as Jermaine Defoe and Michael Bradley are concerned?
Well, as you know, I mean, different towns hate each other. I mean, you guys hate Milwaukee with a passion. Buffalo, since we don't have a soccer team that really amounts to anything, we've got one of those MPSL teams.
And the Rochester Rhinos, sort of.
Yeah, but they're not. That's as close to us as you are to Milwaukee, to be honest with you. I mean, we're not that close. It's fun. You know, it's fun to have them up there actually matter. And as I said Tuesday after Vanessa and Keith got off swearing about Manchester United, I pointedly asked, why suddenly does Toronto care? I mean, is Lewicki just that golden touch for a team that he comes in and says, okay, you've been doing it all wrong for a while. Here we go. Here, bring three great players in. Well, I don't know about that Brazilian if he's gonna be good, because Brazilians are a dime a dozen in soccer at this point. I mean, I swear every country has an expatriate from there. I hope it's decent, because you know Bitmo Field could draw a lot from Buffalo, because it's just basically a train ride for me once I get a passport just to go there, and that's reasonable. I mean, I have heard people call Defoe here locally in some of the Buffalo blogs a British Robbie Keane for the league, and that he's going to do well. I mean, I know the Brits are just completely mad that he came over, that he didn't go to some lower rung horrible team like Norwich or
Newcastle.
Crystal Palace. Newcastle, yeah. I mean, I don't know why anybody would want to go play for Newcastle that isn't French. I mean, I'm going to check if Seelock is French. El Seelaco or whatever they say. I mean, they're already writing him off for the World Cup this year. But I'm already writing England off for this World Cup anyway. So it's going to be glorious when they fall apart. It really is.
So you mentioned before you are a Portland Timbers fan. Would you go to BMO if Portland weren't there because of this? I guess is what I'm trying to ask.
I would go to an MLS match. I would go to a soccer match just to go to a soccer match. To be honest with you, I mean I'm not one of those people that my favorite team is coming into town. I have to go because to be honest, I live close enough to Columbus, Philadelphia, Toronto, New Jersey to go to enough games to travel around, and I could even make it to DC if I really want to. But why would you want to go to RFK anyway? I mean that should have been bulldozed in the '80s. So
well, that team in DC has improved a lot over this offseason.
Yeah, but where are they playing? I mean, if they're playing in RFK again this year, I mean, I might as well go there just to get a piece of. Well, the place is disintegrating in and of itself. I mean, yeah, it may be improved and it may be the flagship of the league, but until you put that team in New England in real soccer stadiums, you should not be expanding to get Beckham FC in or Ziggy Wolf FC or Arthur Blank FC. You need to fix some teams here, and the MLS has got to fix itself because some of the junk they have pulled recently is, I mean, it's just wrong. I mean, Don Garber, as much great as he's done for the MLS, he has a lot of junk on him, and some of this is getting annoying. I mean, stopping Mo Adu coming in is just stupid.
I get it, though. You don't want your team to make a huge mistake, like overpaying for a defensive midfielder. I don't think Mo Adu is worth $1.2 million.
Oh, no. Mo Adu is not worth it, but at the same point, if you are only worth in the sport what someone else is willing to pay, I mean, who knows when Joey Bart comes over here? Someone's going to throw him stupid money to come over. Everybody's going to get thrown stupid money now because here's the problem. The MLS salary structure is broken. MLS is broken as is. You have players that I'm sorry I made more than that are playing out there playing against superstars. I mean, Beckham made more than the league, and that's kind of outrageous. They need to, when this collective bargaining comes up, they need to fix the salary structure big time, or you're not going to see a Michael Bradley at 26 come over. I mean, yeah, he got paid stupid money, but do you blame him?
The easy fix is to raise the salary cap and raise the minimum salary, the veterans minimum, isn't it?
Yeah, like, exactly, and I would do that right away. I would have done that right now instead of worrying about Beckham FC.
I mean, I kind of like the idea of a team in Miami. It probably won't work, but it'd be kind of cool. And can they be called the Fusion again? Because Miami Fusion, that name is just so ridiculously awful that it's kind of good. You know what I mean?
Well, if they bring back the Fusion, they got to get Ray Hudson out of the booth and put him down there.
back in the old team. Bring the old band back together. Nick Raimondo, Preki, Kyle Beckerman. Just bring them all back down.
Well, but I mean, here's the thing I've been thinking. When Beckham brings this in, what's not stopping Lewicki from going to Miami now?
Nothing, really. Except he is like the head of the board of directors of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment or something like that.
Yeah, and it's gonna be. Yeah, he can resign from that because that's Beckham's boy right there.
That's true. We got a update on the hockey scores. So you mind hanging on the line for a bit and we could talk about England later?
Of course.
Cool. It's Far Post Radio Chicagoland, sportsradio.com. It is the bottom of the hour, which means update time. Here we go.
Chicagoland Sports Radio Sports Update.
At 1:32, I'm Ruben Tisch with your Chicagoland Sports Radio.com update. In the NHL last night, the New York Rangers beat the Detroit Red Wings 1-0 in an original six matchup. The Preds of Nashville beat the Flyers 4-3. The Canadiens beat the Senators 5-4. The Islanders beat the Lightning 2-1. Sharks 3, Panthers 0. The Kings of Los Angeles beat the St. Louis Blues 4-1. That was a fantastic game, by the way. It was on NBC Sports Network last night. It was good. Good stuff there. The Winnipeg Jets also beat the Calgary Flames 5-2. And the Phoenix Coyotes beat the Vancouver Canucks 1-0. In the NBA, the Nets beat the Atlanta Hawks 127-110. Joe Johnson, 29 points in that one. The Nets on a roll after beating the Miami Heat by 17 last week. Pacers beat the Knicks 117-89. Melo had 28 in the losing effort, and the Thunder beat the Rockets. Tonight at the United Center, the Anaheim Ducks come to town to take on the Chicago Blackhawks. Puck drop is at 7 p.m., and the Bulls are in the capital to take on the Wizards. That was your ChicagolandSportsRadio.com update, brought to you by the Illinois Center for Broadcasting. For more information, go to bnair.com. I am Ruben Tisch. And we are back here with Steven Brandt. Steven, Man United, Chelsea. This game big. Personally, I'm rooting for Manchester United because Chelsea need to lose to help Arsenal. I'm rooting for United this weekend.
Oh, you're just evil like that. I mean, you like those bad teams like Arsenal like that. So I mean, I have to put up with that with Keith and Vanessa. So I mean, as I said in my daily emails to the both of them, that I'm just hoping that neither team wins, that this is a boring nothing draw, because you know this is the top game on Sunday. So I mean, we're already obsessing about it last week. I can imagine what Rebecca Lowe and all those people on Twitter that are obsessed with her hair are going to be talking about on tomorrow during all the matches.
How can you not be obsessed with Rebecca Lowe's hair? It's fantastic.
Because I like her as a commentator, and I don't really care what her hair looks like. I mean, I know it's a novel concept that as a guy, I should be all drooly and just obsessed about these people that are on air, kind of like we are about Aaron Andrews. It's just society's broken.
I think it's actually, I'm not from a beauty standpoint. It's more like a running gag. It's like, what is Rebecca Lowe's hair look like today? It's like a running gag, and some of the stuff she does is just completely ridiculous and awesome.
Yeah, but at the same point, do you realize that she's probably not even doing this? She's probably sitting in a chair and they're telling her to do certain stuff, because that's what it is to get at the higher level. You're basically a mindless drone, and you're made to do certain stuff. There's weight clauses and all that type of fun. It's just, I'm glad.
Whatever, she's wonderful and needs to be on television more. Anyway, let's back to the football itself. Arsenal taking on Clint Dempsey and Fulham. It sort of saddens me that Theo Walcott's there, but Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain is back. Hopefully, Mesut Ozil won't stink up the place like he did in their win against Aston Villa, which will be nice because he had an awful game that week. You have to expect Arsenal to be top of the league again by the end of play this weekend, don't you?
Obviously they're playing Fulham, who is just can't get out of their own way right now, and the whole Martignol experience kind of failed miserably on them. So I'm just waiting for this to kick off and to be like a 5-0 drubbing, something like that. I mean, we are all obsessed with Clint Dempsey, and I just still think it's wrong that he took a loan move during an off season. I see a colossal Landon Donovan like move with him sometime in the future, which is scary. But
it's what Jurgen Klinsmann wanted.
Yeah, Jurgen Klinsmann wants to run these into the ground, and he doesn't realize that there's no player development in Major League Soccer, so they can't really bring the next group behind him. Because are the Fire going to throw $10 million at Josh Gatt to bring him over because he's an American, or Yeah, well, this is the thing I was having an issue with, why is Mix Deskerud over there? And now I know he's not a naturalized American, but if you want to grow the league, you bring the players all back over here.
Now, the other game of the day, obviously, is Crystal Palace and Stoke City. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
The Tony Pulis matchup.
I'm sort of actually half kidding there. Liverpool playing Villa. You assume that SAS is just going to beat the bejesus out of Villa. You'd think, right? At home.
Yeah, I love the combination of Shearer and Sutton up at the top. That's the old one because we don't come up with new names for anything. You know, I think they are. But the sad thing is they're playing against Brad Guzan, and I want Brad Guzan to be great, and for him to get this firing squad is going to be kind of scary. I mean, the only thing that could detract from it is Guzan coming out and biting Luis Suarez halfway through it.
So we're looking at the schedule the next couple of weeks. Tuesday is what could, quite frankly, could make or break your season in the Merseyside Derby. I find it hard, as great as Liverpool are attacking, I find it difficult for me to not pick Everton. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Oh, you're completely and utterly wrong, because you should like teams that were red, because that's just who you are. This is going to be a fun match, and you know, I'm glad that Everton is actually good and fun and actually transferring in players and, you know, doing what they were, because there was a time when the league was based in basically Liverpool, and to see a Merseyside Derby that isn't one team that just is horrible and playing negative football is fun. I mean, I hope this is like that Stoke Liverpool game of last week. That's like a 5-4 win Liverpool.
How great was that out of Stoke, by the way? I've been watching a lot of Stoke soccer, because I'm sort of like against the grain in that respect. I'll watch things that people call bad just because people call them bad. But Stoke has been one of the more entertaining teams in the league this year.
Yeah, that's what's sad. I mean, I half expect Mark Hughes to simultaneously combust during this, because, I mean, hopefully he's gotten himself righted after all the managerial stops he's had since Man City. I mean, the fact that he could turn this around, and I mean, they're another one of those many teams that could be going down this year,
the entire bottom half of the table is within like 6 points of the relegation zone. It's nuts.
Yeah, and it would be. I was playing with this in my head this morning, in that maybe we should relegate the whole bottom half and bring up the top half of the championship. Just switch both completely. And while we're at it, just relegate Chelsea to the championship just for the fun of it.
That'll be great. Then we get Leeds United back in the Premier League, so we have a proper villain again. It'll be nice.
Well, we're not too far off from them coming up. I mean, they seem to be righting themselves. I mean, it seems like, well, unless if McDermott gets fired, but it would be nice to see them, Watford and Derby, come up.
Yeah, it'd be nice. As a Derby County, as a relatively new Derby County fan, that would be nice.
Yeah, that and or Leicester City to come up. This, you need some of these older franchises, and we need Wolverhampton to be better again because they were classic. But once again, these big weeks with all the money have ruined the sport. We need Joey Barton to take over from Michael Platini.
I love Joey Barton. Yeah, he is the soccer communist, if there was ever one. Anyway, thanks for calling in. Really appreciate it, as I always do. I will be subbing for you on Tuesday Vuvuzela on Tuesday.
You're sitting for me because Keith is taking over. I have a sneaky suspicion you guys are going to be talking about the Arsenal match. They'll mock Liverpool openly while I'm gone because I know him and Vanessa are going to have a field day because there are going to be two losses on Manchester United by Tuesday at 6, and I'm just going to be laughing all day about that.
I'll see you when I see you. Thanks for calling in.
All right, talk to you later.
That was Stephen Brandt of Tuesday Vuvuzela on Blog Talk Radio. I will be sitting in for him next Tuesday after the Premier League games that day. So that's happening. Coming up next, we will put a bow on it and wrap it up. It is Far Post Radio, Chicagoland Sports Radio. Far Post Radio, Chicagoland Sports Radio.com, wrapping up with a fantastic show today. Kevin Egan joined us for a good 20 minutes there in an interview taped at about 11:30. It's why we were late by a couple minutes because I was putting together that. Guillermo Rivera also joined us at the top of the second hour of the show. And some awesome stuff happening in the national stuff. And so, what we've got, the NWSL draft happened earlier this morning. The Chicago Red Stars have made a couple selections, some really good ones, too. They've done some good stuff over there with the ladies' team in the city of Chicago. So, let's see. I'm trying to find it. Their picks. Excuse me. The Chicago Red Stars selected with their first two, because I had to come in and do the interview. I couldn't really follow the draft completely, but they did make moves. They got themselves Julie Johnson, the captain of the U20 national team, who won the U20 World Championships in 2012. They also got Vanessa DeBrando from U of I, a local product from Naperville, also on that U20 team. So the Red Stars making moves in the draft, just making moves, getting better. Another move they made, unfortunately, this time the striker and Ella Masser was taken by the expansion Houston, the Dash, I believe their name is, the Houston Dash, that have a formal relationship with the Houston Dynamo. It took Messer in the expansion draft. So that's a bit of a loss. But they get a couple more attacking players in the NWSL draft. Some other stuff coming around here on as we move towards the end of the show. We have some stuff being said by Don Garber. Garber has said some stuff and some things. Reportedly, MLS is losing a whole bunch of money. I believe it's $75 to $100 million is what's being reported. For them, at least their losses, which is kind of interesting, especially coming off the Michael Bradley and Jermaine Defoe signings. As far as the stuff going on there, it's not particularly good as far as that goes for MLS, but it's collective bargaining time. That's what that means. CBA is up at the end of this coming season, and put your chips on the table. Time to deal the cards. It's time to go to war off the field between the MLS Players Association and the league. I expect a jump in the salary cap, a bigger one, because it has gone up. I believe this year it's about $3 million up from, I believe it's $29.5 million that was there. And that's the show. Thank you to Kevin Egan, who joined us from the Emerald Isle. He is on vacation, but had some time, almost a half an hour, about 20 minutes or so, to talk to us about MLS and the Fire and some of the college prospects. Also talked a bit about Jermaine Defoe and the MLS perception and the perception of American soccer. We touched on how it is in Europe and things. We've also talked to Guillermo Rivera, who joined us to talk a bit more about the Fire and what they've been doing in the offseason. And we talked to Steven Brandt about stuff and things. Usually it devolves into a screaming match about Liverpool and Manchester United. Anyway, whatever. It's good fun. It's good fun, and that's what we're about here on Far Post Radio. Chicagoland, sportsradio.com, and tune in. If you want to get in touch with me, you can tweet at me, at Ruintish. It's the best place to find me. You can also excuse me, you can also email me at RuinPTish@gmail.com. I don't know if there's anything coming up next on the show. I haven't seen Philip Timmons, so maybe we will have a happy hour at some point. Maybe we won't. I don't know. But thank you for listening. We hope to bring you some sort of show quality next week at some point. It's on Friday from noon to 2. This is Far Post Radio on Chicagolandsportsradio.com. See you next week. Mio sole, tu segui con me, con me, con me, con me. Time to say goodbye. Oh,
We're back, everybody. Pro Wrestling Experience here on ChicagolandSportsRadio.com is your official home to the road to WrestleMania 30. Join me, Joshua Lopez, and my co-host, Alex Velasquez, as we talk about every single thing that happens in the world of professional wrestling, from WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor Wrestling, and even the old school. Join us every Wednesday, 10 a.m. through 1 p.m., only on ChicagolandSportsRadio.com.
Listen to Mayhem on ChicagolandSportsRadio.com.